so many people, especially around open source, wait to be invited. They're not sure how to contribute, so they're waiting for that invitation. And I tell people all the time, you don't have to wait on an invitation. Pick your project.
Welcome to the Open at Intel podcast, where we're all about open source, from software to security to innovation and beyond. I'm your host, Catherine Druckmann, an open source evangelist at Intel, bringing you leading-edge, free-ranging conversations from some of the best minds in the open source community. Let's get into it. I chatted with Amber Grainer at KubeCon about everything from our early days in open source to her current work with the Kubeflow project, emphasizing the importance of inclusivity, mentorship, and contributing non-code skills to open source projects. I had a great time, and I think you will too.
Hey, Amber, thank you so much for joining me and taking a little time out from your KubeCon schedule. I know you're traveling today, so I'm extra honored that you'll take a little time for me.
Thanks, Catherine. And it was fun to realize that you and I actually met back in 2009. And
I know.
At OSCON,
such a
it seems
small
like
world.
A million years ago. But
well, it was.
That was the first year I actively participated in open source.
Wild. That is... So a little backstory. So Amber and I, we were both involved in publishing, in the open source publishing world at the time. I was working for Linux Journal, and you were doing some freelance writing, I think?
With Linux New Media.
Yeah. So we were, you know, we were doing the open source conferences. We were reminiscing yesterday about how few women there were at the time. It's changed quite a bit. Maybe not enough, I would argue. In fact, definitely not enough, I would argue. But it has changed. You know, I joked that there were five of us back then, so we all knew each other. That wasn't that much of a stretch. You didn't run into a lot.
No, and I think, what was that study that was done about that time? It said 2%?
Yeah, 2% in the open source world. It was a little bit higher.
2009, 2010, yeah. It was, like, very low.
In the software world in general, I think it was maybe 10, maybe 15, maybe 20, but open source was 2. And our readership at the time actually reflected that too at Linux Journal. We had less than 5% of the readers were women, and but most of the people they were doing the work to produce it were, which is kind of funny. So we've seen things. Suffice it to say, how far back would I say that I go back in the open source world? I started using Drupal in about 2005, maybe 2006. So I would probably date it then, and then I joined Linux Journal in 2007 and sort of broadened my open source horizons, you might say. So it's been a while now, and we've seen so much change.
I know. My first taste of open source was actually when I was still in the Army back in the early 90s, and back then, 18th Airborne Corps, I was at Fort Bragg, now Fort Liberty. I was there, and... the guys from the 82nd got a hold of some Slackware and an old Zenith like laptop that had the blue background with the gray letters or the gray letters with the, you know, the reason I wear glasses today because
we used those in monochromatic.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they wanted to see if they could pass Intel, just messages in general now, nothing classified or anything like that. Could they get an uplink to an aircraft in flight so that when these troops were going anywhere in the world in 18 hours or less, they could get intel before they hit the ground, because whatever intel they left with back then, they didn't get new intel till they hit the ground. And so imagine being a paratrooper, and you're going into another country, and whatever intel they briefed you on, wherever that forward line of battle was or whatever, it might have moved by the time you got to wherever you were going. And so they were testing to see, could they pass traffic on the... So that was my first taste of open source was back then. And then I wanted to, but you know, that Slackware was like this huge stack of disks back in the day.
Yes, it was.
And like,
people don't,
you know, some people joke
kids
about
today.
Yeah, exactly. People joke about having to use a soldering iron to, like, you know, get their boards to even be able to do what it needed to do to run this software and that. And then you needed to go find the man pages, and then you need, like, it was a lot of work back then to even get to the point where you could use open source. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to focus on my family, and I'm going to focus on being a mom, and I'm going to, you know, got out of the Army and did that kind of stuff. And then fast forward to where my husband worked for Red Hat, and I wanted to, now this was back before Fedora, back, you know, this was early days when Red Hat was probably only like 250 people.
Wow.
Before the RHCA program, you know, any of that stuff. And so I wanted to be involved. And I just remember every time he would go out of town or something like that, my printer wouldn't work, and I would go back to my Mac, and then I would swear, like, why does this always happen? But then when my kids got older, and then he actually jobs in between Red Hat and other stuff, but like he went to work for Canonical. And it was back in the Intrepid days, and he brought me this old Dell notebook, and he gave me an Intrepid CD and said, use the community, because he was a kernel developer back then, and he said, use the community, because not everybody has a kernel developer sitting in their living room. Right. I'm not going to help you. You figure out the community. And within a couple hours, I was blogging, and then Ricky Ansley found me, and I started working with her at Linux New Media, and then Pearson picked me up to review, like, the official Ubuntu book, and then I became a co-author for two of the editions of the official Ubuntu book.
Oh, so you must have worked with, did you work with Kyle Rankin?
Yes.
He worked, that
is. He was one of the co-authors then too, so.
Funny.
So yes, a small world, and I just was determined that, you know, in this space, there's so many more opportunities than just code.
Yeah.
That I was determined to be like, you know what, you don't have to write code to be successful in this space.
Yeah, it's so nice to be reminded of that, because I'll just quickly share my own baggage.
Yes,
please
do. I
have a lot of baggage with this. So again, I was using, and I was a web developer at the, you know, way back then. And so I was writing code here and there. I wouldn't say it was very good, but it worked for the most part. you know, if I looked at it now, I might be horrified, but that's neither here nor there. But I never really had the courage, I would say, to make a pull request, do maybe once or twice over a several year period, I might, just to say that I did try to make some kind of code contribution. But I had that baggage that if it's not code, it's not a real contribution. Even though I edited an entire issue of Linux Journal devoted to Drupal, I wrote columns about Drupal, I wrote blog posts about Drupal modules and gave advice and all of those things, I never actually saw those as contributing. Until now, I'm like, oh, well, actually, I kind of was. But until my Drupal profile had that I had contributed to all of these modules, I never felt like a real contributor. And I think that is ridiculous. And I wish I could have a conversation with, you know, go back to my younger self and sit myself down and explain that there are other things beyond code. And in fact, code might be the easy part. People, I think, are kind of the hard part, right?
I think there's this misunderstanding. I give this talk, and it's called Every Into, and that's non-technical end user. And I'm not saying anybody should call somebody else a non-technical end user. It's kind of self-identifying as non-technical. But the reality is there's always someone who knows more than you do, and there's always someone that you know more than they do. And
absolutely.
So you learn something, and you share something. And I think it's sad that there's still folks who kind of, like you said, if you could go back and talk to your younger self and explain that those contributions are just as important as the code, because people can write code, but if there's not somebody to share it, if there's not somebody to tell people about it, if there's not
evangelize.
Exactly. If there's not that, then it just kind of sits there and it's on somebody's own personal project. And so there's this whole wrapper around the code that goes together. It's a relationship that you, just like you can't have hardware without software, or software without hardware, because if it's hardware by itself, it's just this crazy art project or, you know, a clothes rack or, you know, paperweight, whatever it happens to be. And software without the hardware is just a book you can't read, if you really think about it. So it goes together. So the code, along with all the non-code things, it has to go hand in hand. And I think there's this misconception that soft skills are easy.
Yeah. No.
And those are the things that a lot of people aren't taught, is those people skills. There's rules around the technical piece. And technical, I correct people about this all the time. Technical includes code, but not limited
to
code.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing a little bit of that creep back into open source, because I was at an event 3 years ago, and it was with a company that I work for, and there was a gentleman that walked up to me and literally said, are you technical? And I didn't answer, and then he proceeded to ask me if I could go find somebody to turn the AC up because he was cold. So he assumed I was one of the event planners. And I just kind of walked away, and somebody else let him know my background and that kind of stuff. But I was just like, this is still happening in this day and age that people are still asking those questions. Huh. And so I ask people now when somebody says, are you technical? I said, well, let me ask what you're really asking me. Are you asking if I write code, or are you asking me if I know the technical aspects of a particular project, or do I know how to use something? Or mm-hmm. So that question is kind of a two-edged sword. And I think if we let people kind of get back to that technical equals code, we're doing a disservice to all of open source. So
I think that's a fair assumption, a fair assessment. I feel like we constantly have to remind people maybe that without good documentation, without project management, without community management, without soliciting feedback, without somebody actually doing the work and putting the work in to encourage contribution and all, and get the word out about your project, no one person can do everything. It's just like software.
Yep.
Software is very complex. You have a lot of moving parts, a lot of different discrete units that work together to make it actually work as intended. Well, the community and evangelism is the same. There are a lot of moving parts. You can't just write code, throw it out, throw it on GitHub and expect to build something that's really sustainable or even viable.
Exactly. And I think I just want, to get back to those stages of like people learn something and they share something. And
yeah.
I'll probably say that a million times, but I know I'm guilty of this. Like when I first started in open source back in personally in 2009 and got really involved and started writing blog posts about it. And then, with Linux New Media, had my U and Ubuntu mm-hmm. blog series, and then helped with like Ubuntu User Magazine when they launched it, all those kind of things. And I would learn something new about this software, and then I would go share it with the world. And then as you progress in your career, at least for me, there for a while, we were talking about imposter syndrome a little mm-hmm. bit yesterday. There for a while, I'm like, well, I can't share that I just learned this new thing because now I'm this director, and what if people think? And I'm like,
what? I know what you mean. Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? Where did that sense of adventure and that sense of let me...
curiosity.
Exactly. Let me share... what I know now, I tell people, nobody's born with this information.
Right.
We all learn it at different rates. We all learn in different styles. Like some people can learn by reading and then just go doing it. Other people have to read, then they got to go see an example, and then they got to go touch it. This whole 3D learning kind of thing. And I think that we've got to get back. We, as those of us have been in this space for a long time, we have to get back to reminding people we learn every day too.
Yeah,
and
hopefully.
We learn and we
if you
share.
Stop learning, then I don't know what happens.
I think
you get
you
left
die.
Behind.
I
yeah,
think
maybe
you die.
We die. Yeah.
Like whether that's a physical or a mental or whatever, emotional death. I think that when you stop learning, there's this slow death that
happens. Yeah.
And not to get dark or anything, but I think in this space there's a whole bunch of people who have forgotten to learn something and share something. And I know I was guilty of that for a while.
Yeah.
And now I want to remind people of that. Remind people that everything that you do in this space is helping someone else.
Yeah.
Like you're not in a vacuum. You're not alone. And you're right. We've seen things. The inclusivity that has happened, over the last 13, 14 years have been incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have a ways to go because I think in some projects, that thought leadership is sort of left behind because you're forcing non-developers to use developer tools.
Yeah.
Like, if GitHub isn't in your workflow and you've got to use it to submit an article, well, you might have a really great technical writer that doesn't know how to do a pull request, so you're missing the opportunity for this talent to participate. And maybe, like you said, maybe they're intimidated by doing a PR, or maybe they just don't know. So making sure there's somebody to help.
Or just don't make assumptions.
Yeah.
Don't assume that everybody knows how to make a pull request or knows how to use Git.
And so I think we still have a ways to go to make it easier or more intuitive for people to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know I run into folks who, Amber, I would love to contribute to this, but I don't have a GitHub account, or I don't, but they've written books and they write articles and they're amazing thought leaders in this space or in technology in general, and they want to have a pet project or they want to get involved with something, but they just, they don't know those tools. Yeah. And I'm like, we'll find you somebody to help you with that.
Yeah.
We'll, and I just think for as inclusive as we've become and as diverse as we've become, we still have a ways to go before we get it completely right, if we ever get it completely right, you know?
I think as long as we're trying to get it completely right, that's half the battle, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But we'll get a little bit closer.
Yeah, and you know, I look around this space and I think, look how far it's come.
Yeah.
When you look at, you know, when the LF started and then all the sub-projects, and now you got the CNCF with its own subculture in there, and then you've got, like, the other foundations that, you know, have come into play, and this is just the, you know, in, near, and around the Kubernetes space. And you look across this whole event and you see that there's almost 10,000 people that register for this event. And
is that all? It feels like more.
It does feel like more. But I think 10,000 was the magic number. And I think that, you know, when you look around and you just see all the different personalities and all the different skill sets and all the different interests,
yeah,
you know, this is kind of world changing mentality that's here. And it's
Well, open source people are the best people.
I really think so. I have an affinity for, you know, open source folks.
Or so stuff, if I keep saying it, everyone will believe it.
I hope so. You know,
yeah.
I think that's...
It's true, though. What do they say?
Like, you have to come in contact with something 7 times at least before you, you know,
like
embody it or remember it or whatever. And I think, you know, we should do like 70 times, you know,
yep,
100 to get people to realize that. Because I still think there's outliers that don't understand that everybody, regardless of their skill set, regardless if they're just beginning, if they've been around forever, like, there's a place for them in open source. And you just have to ask a couple questions and then you can point people in the right direction.
Yeah.
And I love doing that. So
I wonder too, you know, I had a conversation with somebody actually, it was at All Things Open, about students, for example, a lot of college students who are computer science students aren't necessarily plugged into open source. They're not using GitHub. They don't necessarily think about contributing to open source and getting involved as a goal. And I wonder how the culture has shifted in a way since we began our open source lives that might have changed. And maybe I wonder what we're not seeing, right? For the next generation of coming up, are they as excited about open source? Are they invested in the ideology? Are they interested in the culture? Are they just interested in getting a job? I mean, that's totally fair as well, of course. But yeah, I wonder how it's changed.
Well, I think, you know, at least when I got started, and maybe this resonates with you, it was an us against them mentality. It was, you know, almost a David and Goliath story, if you will. And it was open source needs to win. And it was this open against proprietary and who was going to win. And now there's this hybrid approach to all this that open source has won. We're everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, just think about, I don't think there's a tool on the machine learning and artificial intelligence side that doesn't have a component of open source in it, whether it's a proprietary solution or not.
No, the vast majority. It's well more than a majority. You know, the numbers are anywhere. It's as high as 90% of all software contains open source components.
And so I think we're just everywhere, and it's just there. And it's almost like taking it for granted that open source is there, and it's not this thing that you've got to go and convince people and you've got to go and get them excited about it. And I think it's up to us to generate that excitement and to sort of pass the torch on why this is important, why these principles and philosophies are important, where they started from. Because a lot of young people, everybody's young to me these days, but like, or at least I feel like that. I think a lot of the folks coming out of college these days, or they're getting introduced to open source because it's their job. They're not getting introduced to it because
they're tinkering.
Exactly.
Yep.
So that meant that it's a different mentality. Because I've asked folks, is your experience with open source because you're getting paid to do it, or because you have a passion for it, or did you have a passion for it and then you got paid to do it? And I'm finding more and more that people are learning about open source and getting involved because work is dictating that, not the other way around. And I think people forget that they can have this great impact outside of work. But now, I also think, too, after coming out of COVID, people also had a reset on what was important. And, you know, it's not these, oh, I want to work 80 hours a week, right, or I want my family's important and these things are important and I don't want technology to take away from those interpersonal relationships. And I think there's a whole lot of dynamics that are going on with it. But I think those of us who have seen that shift and were wondering those same questions that you were just wondering about, it's up to us to generate that excitement. Like I gave this talk at, I think, University of Chicago, and it was called, You Don't Need Permission to Contribute to Your Own Destiny. So many people, especially around open source, wait to be invited. I would like to be involved in that. Oh, I use that software. Or maybe it's on the video game inside. Or, oh, there's this, you know, in Steam or like whatever it happens to be. And they get a taste of it, but they're not sure how to contribute. They're not sure how to get it. So they're waiting for that invitation. And I tell people all the time, you don't have to wait on an invitation. Pick your project. Pick what you want to go do and just go jump in the water. Just go get in the community. Join a meeting. Listen for a while. Yeah. Lurk around for a while. Read the documentation. And then when you're ready, get involved. But so many people are waiting for that invitation. And if I could have a banner like above my head, it would be like, get involved. Find your passion.
Yeah.
Don't wait for somebody to tell you it's okay. Go make your own path. It's okay. Like,
right,
it is 100% okay. And I think that plays, I don't know if that resonates with you or not, but, you know?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, you, no one should, well, I mean, that applies to many things in life, but yeah, you don't need to wait for an invitation, yeah, to follow what interests you. I wonder then, our role, again, as people who have been around a little bit longer, I do see in making open source sustainable, a mentorship, right? We want to encourage people to get involved for obvious reasons, but also because, you know, I think as people find their way, they do kind of get hooked a little bit on that collaboration,
and
the community, and keep coming back for more and keep innovating and keep contributing, and that's the exciting part, I think.
I think there's something really interesting about being part of something bigger than yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, we see people do that all the time, and not just open source communities, but, I mean, you can look at religious communities, you can look at sports communities, you can look, you know, pick any community that's out there, not just open source. But I think we look at open source as, or at least I do, as this opportunity to change the world. And
we
people go, oh, can it still be changed? There's so much innovation that's happening. There's lots of changes that can occur, especially now with machine learning and artificial intelligence, and that it's like the Wild West right now in that area. There, you know, there's not a lot of rules right now.
Right.
People are starting to look at the rules. There's not a lot of licensing around these models and
openness to be determined, right?
Exactly. And I think that, you know, there is a psychology about belonging to your tribe or belonging to your community, or like that's why people seek out, you know, belonging. And I think open source has given that to a lot of people. And it's just this amazing opportunity to come together and do something wonderful and do something great, whether that's around, you know, an operating system, whether that's around a particular tool to do a particular job, whether that's now in, like I said, this machine learning and artificial intelligence space, whatever it happens to be, there's so many opportunities to be part of something bigger than yourself. Mm-hmm. And once you have that one success, it's easy to go on to the next success, and it's easy to build on that. And that's what we as humans, we love as a whole. Like, there's some people, I don't know what psychiatry would call those, maybe psychopaths that don't have any emotion or whatever. But for the most part, we live for those successes, and we want to build on those, and we want to share those, and we want to, you know, have other people come in and have those successes too. And each of those builds on the next thing, like we say in open source, we stand on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah.
And whether you go all the way back, you know, to the Linus and Mad Dog days, you know, whether you go all the way back there and enabling that, like Mad Dog did with Linus, like, or Like, you're just getting started today. There's a there's somebody's or some project's shoulders that you stand on that motivated, mentored, whatever, for you to be here. And I think we always have to continue to tell those stories and not shy away from inviting people in. And also, I think it was in the first edition of Open Source Way that Carsten Wade and them did
way
back in the day, and it said, if you fail, take notes. And yeah. I remember that, and I'm like, you know what? Sharing the failures is just as important as sharing the successes.
Absolutely, yeah. I remember somebody I used to know from open source communities talking about how at some point something they were working on broke massively, right? And they had to fix it. And that is how they became the expert on that particular thing, right? Because when you face disaster, when you fail and you take notes, that's how you help everybody else solve that exact problem, and you are now the expert. So,
and I think that gets back to that learn something, share something.
Yeah.
I think as you go forward in your career, you forget that those failures, or you don't want to share those failures as much because now you might be seen as an expert in the space, or you might, you know, again, imposter syndrome creeps in or whatever. Yeah. But I think it's just as important, no matter what level you are in your career, to remember where you came from.
Yeah.
Don't forget your roots.
Empathy.
Or as my mama would say, don't forget your raisin. You know, like, don't forget where you came from, and don't forget to bring people along. Like, the only time you should look down at somebody is if you're, you know, reaching down to help them up, you know, and help people along in the space. And it makes me sad that we are seeing folks forget to share, forget to encourage, and not necessarily here, but I do see it in other places, or that fear of, I'm afraid to contribute because my emails are going to live in perpetuity, or my contribution's going to live in perpetuity.
And that is intimidating. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And all of my dumb PR, my pull request comments will live forever.
Yeah, but, you know, I tell people it's not like, a lot of people think it's like, you got to leap tall buildings to get involved. It's really just a speed bump that you might trip over.
Yeah. And but we're all human. We're all just humans.
We're all
so just doing
human.
Doing the thing, doing the work, putting in the time, getting better as we go.
Exactly. Yeah. And I, especially on the Kubeflow side, I was just talking to some of the Kubeflow members, and I was just talking to them about, you know, thought leadership. And because they're all relatively young in open source, or at least the ones that I was talking to, and they were asking about, well, how do you convey these different messages? Some of the hard messages, like, you know, how do you tell somebody that they might be hurting the project versus helping it? Or how do you, you know, how do you bring up hard subjects? And like that thought leadership things that when you lead something that all leaders have to do, it's not all sunshine and roses. And,
right.
And how do you do that? And I'm like, you know what? There's a whole group of us that need to start mentoring other people who been in leadership roles and done those things, and we need to teach you how to build your working group, which helps the project, and then you move on to the next leadership position and you mentor somebody else to take on your role. Like, there's this whole mentoring is so important in this space that I know it happens at the CNCF and at the LF and stuff, but then there's this whole group that is outside of that fishbowl that we need to remember to bring them along too, on this journey. And I don't know, I just still find it just as exciting as I found it, you know, 14 years ago. And you know, we were talking that these open source communities are so much more than just the software. It's the personalities and people behind it. It's the camaraderie. It's the, you know, you run into somebody you haven't seen in 10 years, and it's like the conversation never, there was no lull in it. You just pick up where you left off, and it's this amazing, it's this amazing environment where we're all hopefully rowing in the same direction for good, you know, and openness. So
I love it. I think I can't top that. That is exactly what we're here for. We are really here to make the world a better place. And now it's more important than ever. I mean, no pressure, but the world does kind of operate completely on open source software. As our mutual friend George Castro said, if Linux went away tomorrow, there would be zombies.
Yeah, exactly. that is true. And, you know, I can't thank, you know, like meeting that first OzCon that I went to way back when in 2009, I think it was the only time it was in San Jose.
Yeah, and then they moved it back. Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
And, you know, folks would tease me a little bit and say, Amber, you didn't go into the wading pool. You just jumped into the Olympic pool, you know, jumping right into to OzCon and meeting folks.
Everybody was there.
You know,
yeah.
Everybody was there, and everybody was so encouraging. Nobody said, Amber, this is your first OzCon. This is your first time contributing. You shouldn't. It's like, okay, what did you notice? What are you seeing? You're this new face. What's hard for you? How can we make it easier for you? And I'm like, well, let's figure it out, you know, and let's do this together. And it was this incredible opportunity. And I hope that new people who come to this event, to KubeCon and Cloud Native Con, or they come to any Linux Foundation event or any other big open source event, I hope they never feel lost. No. I hope there's people, no matter where they're at, who was just as inviting to them as people were to me 14 years ago, who said, pick your lane, you know, or change lanes, or if this isn't working for you, go over here and do this other thing. And I want it to be just as exciting and this write your own adventure as I had back then. I want everybody to have that experience today. And I want organizations who are, you know, building these solutions on top of open source projects, I want them to remember that there's a trust involved and that transparency and trust. And I know we haven't really gotten to that, but I don't want to not touch on that while we've got the opportunity. That transparency and trust is so important, because these project founders trusted the community they released this software to, with a license that's permissible, you know, with to use this and go and make it better. And they're trusting people to give back. And when they don't give back, and these companies change a license that's more of a business license or AGPL or whatever it happens to be, then shame on you for breaking that trust. But for you breaking that trust, they might not have had to change their license. So I think it's very important to remember transparency and trust in this space. And don't exploit the projects that you're building your enterprise-level solutions on, and remember, somebody gave you that technology. No. You need to give back. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Being a good citizen is incredibly important. And frankly, if you're using software that is mission critical to your business, it behooves you to get a seat at the table.
Exactly.
You absolutely need to contribute. You want to have influence on the project direction. You want to get involved. Good citizenship is a two-way street. Yeah. You get massive benefit for your contribution. I don't know why anyone would not approach it that way, but I suppose it does happen.
I tell people it's the equivalent of, you know, when everybody's got a cell phone, they're walking around with it, and you see unknown caller. You let it go to voicemail because you don't know who it is, so you let it go to voicemail. If you're not participating in these projects,
that's a good point. Yeah,
and you say, oh, I need this feature, or oh, this is broken, or whatever. All right, it's the equivalent of an unknown call at times, because it's like, who is this person? Are they not going to
spam? Is this a spam call? What are they trying to sell me?
and if you don't know them, good, bad, or indifferent, if you're making a request of a project, you should be involved in that project. You shouldn't do just a drive-by, oh, it'd be nice to have this feature, or it'd be nice if you'd fix this bug, or it'd be nice if you did, and not offer any help, you know? And to me, that's the equivalent of an unknown call to a project. When you're not participating, but you're making asks, or you're making demands or whatever of a project that they do something, but you're not participating, I would think that a lot of maintainers let it go to the quote-unquote voicemail. They'll get to it when they get to it, because they don't know who's asking. They don't know why somebody's asking, unless it's already there and, you know, somebody else is asking for it. But I think, you know, there's this participation. When you know people, you take their phone calls. When you know people and you know they're involved and you know they're committed to it, you listen. And that's another benefit of participation. It's not just about influencing, it's also about helping and being understood and known.
Yeah.
And that's human nature as well. And I hope that people remember that trust and transparency go hand in hand in this ecosystem, whether your hardware, whether your software, whether you're, you know, whatever it happens to be. And I hope that people don't forget that.
Yeah, well, I agree. Yeah, there's a social contract involved in open source.
Yeah.
And we all sort of are expected to uphold our end.
Yeah, I hope that I always do. I hope that I'm not one of those people that ever, like, take and don't contribute back. Because I just, like I said, this is a write your own adventure. Pick your project, get involved, you know, figure out what makes you happy, what makes your life better, or what makes your software better, what makes your, whatever your contribution is, like, mm-hmm. whatever your skill set is, you know, get in there and mix it up and contribute. I don't know about you, but there's, if you've heard of the Grand Essentials, have you heard of that?
No.
So I always tell people good projects have the Grand Essentials, and that's something to love, something to hope for, and something to do. And when you think about an open source project, people love open source, they love being involved, or it's a means to an end or whatever. You're hoping that that software, that hardware, whatever that open source piece is going to make a better future, make a better project, whatever. But also, if you're contributing in any community or you're part of a community, you need something to do.
Yeah.
If you're just sitting there like, I've got these skills and nobody's using them, you're not going to stick around in a community that's not utilizing what your skill sets are. So that's why it's so important to have that list of things that community can do. Like, they can get involved. You can give them something to do. It's equivalent to having no pockets. Like, what do you do with your hands if you don't have pockets, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, having that love of a project, that hope in the future, and then something for people to do is critical. That's how you get people involved in your project. If you've just said, oh, we don't have anything for you to do, well, I'm going to go to somewhere that can use my skills and that wants me to participate
right.
and wants
respecting
me to be
the time of your contributors.
And so when you think about it, that's really what you have to do in a community. Like, you've got to have all three of those things for it to be this really successful, engaging community. Because without that piece, that third piece, it's just like, oh, I'm like, they're just listening. They're just reading. They're not doing anything. And there's this whole group of people out there who have amazing skills. And if one project isn't going to utilize them, there's another project that will.
Yep, I aim into that. I feel like we spent this whole time reminiscing and we haven't actually gotten to what you do now. I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit, what are you doing now? What are you doing in the community? What are you most passionate about today?
I'm very active in the Kubeflow community, which really makes it easier to do your ML workflows natively on Kubernetes. So if you're in that space, that's, you know, Kubeflow and all the components that go along with it. And we recently became members of the CNCF. We were in incubation working toward graduation now. And so that was really exciting last October to, you know, Google did the pull request to move it over, and we're finally, you know, listed as an incubating project. So cool. So that's there. And it's been a long journey to hear from, like, the Ubuntu and Fedora days. I think, you know, what I'm really most passionate about is making sure that people know their voice is important, making sure their time and their talent is important no matter where they're at in this space, whether you're walking in today or whether you've been in this space, you know, as long as Mad Dog has, you know, whether... And that there is a place for you, there is a place for your skills, and that just because you don't write code doesn't mean you're not as equally important to a project. And I really, right now, my passion is the thought leadership, mentoring new leaders in this space, making sure those things that we really, as open source, back in the 2010, 2011 timeframe, really tackled back then, those hard discussions around inclusion, around you know, the language that we would use, around accessibility, around, you know, really making sure this space is as inclusive as we want it to be, and that we're mentoring those new leaders to come up, and that technical arrogance doesn't creep back in. And, you know,
10x developer.
I feel like we're seeing a little bit of it because we're not talking about it anymore. and people don't realize their behavior might be a little off-putting or bad. And just like walking up to someone and asking, are you technical?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that will say, no, they're not, because they believe technical equals code. Coming back to the beginning, like technical equals code. It includes it, but it's not equal to. And so I'm really passionate about making sure that people are contributing back. They know there's a lane for them. And if I can't, like, if I'm really big on it, if I don't know the answer, let's go find it together so we both can learn. And I think we need to mentor more and more people in the space, that you don't have to write code to be successful. All of your talents are needed. And if you look around, you know, and you really look at, pick any company. Let's take Intel, for example. Look at the code and look at the hardware, and then look at how many people per person who, like, for every one person that writes code, there's probably three or four people that don't write code that are in support of that. And so it's just time to remind people that there is a place and that your skills are needed, and we want you in this ecosystem. And so I'm really big on the thought leadership piece and the whole learning something, sharing something, and how can I be part of the solution and not part of the problem. So I try to, one of the companies I worked for in the past, it was at Open Compute. I was the second person hired there to really help out with that. And one of the board members said, Amber, we knew when we hired you that you told the emperor they had no clothes on. So having those hard decisions and really making sure that people are good citizens in this space. Some people don't want to hear that. They don't want to be told that, hey, you're being exploitative. And either you come up with a roadmap to give back, or you're part of the problem. Some people, they don't necessarily want to hear that. And I just think the success of this whole ecosystem known as open source is very dependent on that trust, on that social contract, if you will, on that understanding that somebody trusted the community with their project to give it. They're trusting you to give back. And if you break that trust, you break down the whole way this ecosystem functions and works. And so I want to make sure that I'm exciting people, getting people involved, making sure there's leaders coming up, making sure that these principles and philosophies live on, and that everybody knows they can participate. So that's, you know, really, really where I'm at. And I just love helping grow this space, you know?
Well, cool. Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. And
thanks for letting me.
Yeah. It's fun to hear what you're up to and your journey from, you know, how you got here.
Yeah. I mean, I think back to 2009 and I was writing this very opinionated blog, and this is a funny story. You probably can appreciate this. This is how I met Zonker. So I was writing this, like, Journey into Ubuntu, and it was like Journey into Ubuntu part 1, part 34, or whatever. And he finally says across Twitter, he said, can you start naming your blog posts? Can you title them something that tells me what they're about? Because I didn't know anything about blogging back then. I didn't know the first thing about it. Oh, yeah, let me think of creative titles. And then Ricky found my blog, and so she started working with me, you know, on that. And then from there, got really involved, you know, in the Ubuntu world. And then from there, went over to Linaro, so Linux on ARM. So I went over to that space. And then from there, went over to Open Compute, did that for a while and helped orchestrate that. And then I took a break for a little bit. I didn't work in open source. I took a break for about a year, and I managed to bar and book bands down in New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
But I told these bands, I will build your community for you, but I will teach you how to build community around your... So I was, you know, kind of still letting these bands that I would book, you know, this is how you build community, and this is what you need, and all this. So community is community is community, no matter what space it's in. And then I got a call one day that said, hey, are you ever coming back to open source? I'm like, yeah, I might. Jono had called me. And then I started working for Corelight on the cybersecurity side of things. And then I ended up going from there to Aricto. And then from Aricto, I was a hire acquire into HP. But while I was at Aricto, got involved in Kubeflow.
Okay.
And it's just been this incredible journey. And that's what I want to tell people. Like, no matter where you start, that doesn't have to be where you stay. Because I went from software, operating system software to embedded hardware to data center hardware and software to cybersecurity. Software, and now on this space with the ML and AI side of things. And so it's whatever that you have a passion for and you want to learn for.
It's a
you
big
just
open source world out there.
It really is. So I just hope everybody kind of finds their journey. I tell people, community is like water. It will find its own level. And it can be something productive or it can be something destructive, depending on the flow of water or, things like that. And I think community is very much the same way. If you don't harness that correctly, you don't know where it's going and you don't know,
it'll cut a new path.
It really will. And there's nothing wrong with new paths. New paths are great. I love it. And I hope that, I don't know, if everybody's listening, anybody who's listening to our conversation, I hope they get excited about it and say, you know what, I want to get involved if they're not already. Or if they are involved and they were afraid to make a jump to a new lane, they're like, you know what? I can make a jump to a new lane. I can do this. And not hesitate. Just get excited about it and just go out and do it,
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate anybody listening this far. And until next time, on that note, just go out and do it.
You've been listening to Open at Intel. Be sure to check out more from the Open at Intel podcast at open.intel.com/podcast and at Open at Intel on Twitter. We hope you join us again next time to geek out about open source.